they've been husbanding themselves. They've not been going to the front lines to do battle because they know if they do, they'll get killed. So they're staying back in the rear and husbanding their force so they will be the ultimate power in Ukraine, whatever results from the war. And if they are the ultimate power, there will be no peace. There will be no peace. We may have a cessation of hostilities, if you will, but there will be no peace, not as long as these people are there, because they are Nazis, and their motto and their beliefs are Nazi-like. So disaster looming there, too, but I think there's another place where Trump hasn't a clue. He has people talking to him, people briefing him, that are telling him the untruth about Ukraine and about the situation in Ukraine. No matter whether he wants to go more forcefully in support of Zelensky, he wants to be neutral, or he wants to completely back off, he does not know the truth about Ukraine. And he's the only one, the empire is the only one, sad to say, that really has still the remaining oomph and contact and wherewithal in terms of the Europeans to shut this down. And he's not doing it. So there's no strategy.
What kind of lies is he being told regarding Ukraine, that NATO can still hold on to this war, that Ukraine can still keep pushing the Russians? Are these the kind of lies? What are the kind of lies he is hearing? There is a point in time before the summit, I'm talking about President Putin and President Trump's summit, the Alaska summit, where Trump started echoing the reality when he was talking about Ukraine, loss of Ukrainian forces, the movement of the front, the direction of movement of the front lines, etc., etc. And recently he has stopped talking anything about it. So what kind of lies are being told to him?
Mostly Lindsey Graham and his crew, who are telling him it doesn't matter. What you're doing is you're bleeding Russia, and you want to bleed them to the last drop of blood. And if it costs Zelensky his life, if it costs Ukraine another 100 kilometers of terrain, so be it. You want to bleed Putin to the maximum. And Graham's even telling him that if he does that, in the middle of that, Putin will fall. That's what he's telling him, that Putin is hard pressed. Even when someone comes over that knows what he's talking about and tells the president, as one individual did, I'm told, that Putin is hard-pressed, all right, but he's hard-pressed by the right. They want him to finish this war. If necessary, destroy Ukraine. Not hard-pressed by peaceniks or people who want it to stop. But Trump is not getting the right view. And Graham has, I don't know what kind of hold Graham has on Trump, because really the two men despise one another. It works both ways. They despise one another. But Graham has some kind of hold on him. And it might not just be Graham as Graham. It might be the entourage that Graham leads in the Senate and elsewhere. But they do not want to give Putin a moment's rest. They fear if we give him a moment's rest, he will revive, and they know he's dying. That's what they're telling Trump.
I was following the U.S. escalation on India when those additional sanctions were imposed, and I saw that Lindsey Graham had a tremendous leverage. I mean, I didn't have any direct evidence, but the kind of things Lindsey Graham was saying about restrictions on H-1B, about additional sanctions on India because of buying Russian crude oil for refinery, et cetera, all of them manifested, or even ultimately Peter Navarro and others started towing the same line and started spilling them in Fox News. And that became the U.S. policy. I mean, long before it was even spoken within the officials in the Trump administration, it was Lindsey Graham and his ilk who was making noises about those kind of policies. So it's not surprising when you were saying that Lindsey Graham must be having some kind of leverage over Trump, despite the two guys hating each other.
I'm being told, and when I was first told this, I just tossed it aside, But now I'm having difficulty doing that. That it's somehow wrapped up with the Epstein affair. That so many people have so many holds on other people because of the Epstein affairs. And so a lot of what we're looking at is kind of opaque. You wonder why this happened. You wonder why that happened. And it goes back to years and years of a lot of participation with Epstein in these people's lives. And it's not just the Lolita Express. It's not just, you know, pedophiles and so forth. That's some of it. But a lot of it is the money he wielded and the influence through that money he wielded and the nefarious things that people did with that money. For example, I'm told that Ehud Barak was as participatory in the island process as was Prince Andrew. And we've seen what happened to Prince Andrew. And that doesn't happen very often unless there's some fire there. You know, a lot of smoke, a lot of royal smoke, but there was some fire there. I'm told Barak was as participatory as Prince Andrew was. And there are emails to corroborate that. I'm told Bill Clinton was almost the same. And I go back to Oslo and that moment of sudden stoppage, and Arafat caught in the headlights like a deer and wondering what had happened to him. And everything ended, stopped. And I'm being told by people who know what they're talking about normally that there was a little blackmail going on there with both Clinton and Barack. So if those kinds of things have any shred of truth to them, then a lot of what the question you ask about Graham and where's this power coming from has an origin, I think. There are a lot of people blackmailing a lot of people. And Lindsey Graham's not necessarily out of that either, because Lindsey is known to have some problems himself. I won't go into them, but he has some problems. When he says he doesn't have time for sex, he's too busy, there are reasons for that.
Thank you. Greetings once again, dear listeners. I'm Masuma, and you're tuned into Iran Radio, broadcasting from Tehran, the vibrant capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Let's take a look at what's coming up next on your station. We begin with the teacher. In this program, Brother Atta, Sheikh Ruhullah Rouhani, Sheikh Ahmed Fadai, and Sheikh Ali Alavian guide us through a comprehensive review of key teachings and principles in Islamic and Shi'at theology and ethics. It's a valuable opportunity to deepen your understandings and reflection. Next, we'll travel the globe in the round, the world with reporters. Our international correspondents will share engaging reports on a wide range of topics from their regions, offering a global perspective on current affairs. Following that, join us for Back to Reality. In this thoughtful program, guests with first-hand experience living in non-Islamic countries share their perspectives on maintaining faith, navigating cultural differences, and practicing Islam in diverse environments. Then we'll turn once again to Leader's Speech, featuring English translations of selected statements and addresses by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution. Those powerful messages, delivered on different occasions, offer deep insights and spiritual guidance. Coming up is the teacher. Stay with us.
We once had a teacher, the teacher of teachers. He changed the world for the better and made us better creatures.
In the name of Allah, Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to the program, The Teacher. Please stay with us.
What will we say in front of it?
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Good morning. Well, welcome to another episode of the program, The Teacher, with me, Atta, the host of this program. An analysis on the most important Islamic teachings and doctrines. Two experts, two guest speakers, two ustad and professors from the Islamic House of Awru here, Sheikh Fadai and Sheikh Danish. Sheikh Fadai, assalamu alaikum to you.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Danish, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.
So we welcome again to the studio here at IRIB English Radio. All right. For today's discussion, we want to talk about visiting graves, whether it is allowed in Islam or not. It is among Islamic, especially Shia traditions, which is recommended. And so some special days, on some special occasions, the people go to the cemeteries and to the graveyards and pay visit to the graves and sometimes the tomb of the holy imams or something like that. For today's discussion, I want to talk about the general grave visiting. Sheikh Fadai, let's start with you. So where does it come from, visiting the graves?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. You know, in Islam, we believe that after death, the new life starts. We don't think that this material aspect of life is the only aspect. We have two kinds of life, material life and the other one, which is spiritual and eternal life. After we die, we just change our way of life.
Mm-hmm.
We get out of this body, which is our means. You know, the real me is my soul.
Yes.
Not my body.
All right.
This body is a means, like a car.
Mm-hmm.
When you drive a car, the main one are you as a driver. You are going somewhere, not your car.
Mm-hmm.
Car is just your means, just is the transportation means.
Yes.
When you lose this car, you are you.
Yes.
You do not finish.
Yeah.
When we die, we do not finish. We just lost our car.
Yes.
Which is the body.
All right.
So we put this body under the ground, under the soil. But why do we refer to this body again?
Mm-hmm.
Because we have in our riwayats, Al-Qabro in Imma Hufratun min Hufar al-Nar wa Imma Rawdatun min Riyad al-Jannah.
Uh-huh.
This grave.
Would you translate? That's right.
Yes.
Okay.
The grave is one hole from the holes of hell.
All right.
Or one garden of the gardens of heaven.
All right.
This is the riwayah. What does it mean? It means that before you enter the day of Hisab, Yawm al-Hisab, the day of calculation,
yes,
of the deeds, you are in your grave,
uh-huh,
not the body,
okay,
even the soul.
All right.
Even the soul is there, but not by material aspect that we see.
Mm-hmm.
If you dig the grave, you don't see unless the body.
The skeleton's over there.
Yes.
Yeah.
But we believe that when God and our prophet says that this is a hole, one hole from the holes of hell, or one garden from the gardens of
paradise,
heaven.
That's right.
He is here. He stays here.
Mm-hmm.
And God will make a contemporary hell or heaven for him.
Even I've heard that on the day of resurrection, the true meaning of resurrection is this, that the people are rising,
yes,
up from the graves, okay?
Yes. We believe that he stays here.
Uh-huh.
So we refer to this grave in order to help him.
Mm-hmm.
How? You know, when you, for example, recite Quran verses or you recite some du'as, you pray for him, you are helping him.
Mm-hmm.
He himself or she herself, he cannot continue his deeds.
All right.
The a'mal, the deeds of him, is closed.
It's
he cannot
closed,
continue.
Right.
But you can continue helping him.
Okay.
So we go there in order to help him. So this
that's
is
right.
not bid'ah. This is not haram. And we can continue that. We have some witness that,
okay,
in the time of Prophet.
All right, that's right. So this was my next question for Sheikh Danish, that was this a tradition, we can say, a conduct of Prophet Muhammad and the Ahlul Bayt to pay visit to the tombs of the deceased one or not?
Yes, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So regarding this, as Sheikh Fadai mentioned, that it was a tradition of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wassalam. Lady Fatima, salamullah alayha, is mentioned to have visited the grave of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam after the death of the Holy Prophet. And we have this concept of Baytul Ahzan,
uh-huh,
which was specifically made by Imam Ali alayhi salam
for
the days of mourning of,
right,
Lady Fatima Tuzahra. She would visit the grave of the Holy Prophet, she would weep over the grave of the,
mm-hmm,
Holy Prophet, and of course it was a way of showing her displeasure for what had happened after the death.
And the photos are still available if you Google it, you know, Jannatul Baqi or Baytul Ahzan, because,
yes,
there were some constructions, domed constructions made on them,
yes,
are still available, okay?
Yes. And
before they were destroyed.
And the graves of the martyrs of the Uhud,
uh-huh,
battle.
Hamza Sayyid al-Shuhada,
Hamza,
that's right.
Hamza Sayyid al-Shuhada.
Right.
There were special commemoration ceremonies,
mm-hmm,
for Hamza Sayyid al-Shuhada. And the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam asked the Medinan women that would you not commemorate the martyrdom of my relative, my uncle.
That's right.
As you have commemorated your own relative. So they gathered to commemorate his martyrdom. Mourning ceremonies were held. And of course, visiting the graves of the Shuhada'i Uhud was a part of the tradition,
okay,
of the Muslims. And throughout history,
Prophet Muhammad used to pay visit to the tomb of Hamza Sayyid al-Shuhada too, isn't it?
Prophet Muhammad,
okay,
yes.
If I'm right, you know, Prophet Muhammad used to pay visit to the tombs,
yeah,
of the martyrs.
Do we have this tradition here?
Or, for instance, the paying ziyara to the tomb of his,
yeah,
mother.
Yes.
Amina, okay?
Yes.
That's
so,
right.
So we have in the traditions that the Shuhada'i Uhud, or the martyrs of Uhud, were commemorated. Lady Zahra, salamullah alayha,
yes,
used to pay visit to the grave of the Holy Prophet. And even the companions used,
uh-huh,
to come to the Holy Prophet. They would ask the Holy Prophet for praying for them, and their prayers were answered. In their lifetime, in the lifetime of the Holy Prophet, and even after the lifetime of the Holy Prophet, we have traditions,
uh-huh,
that
okay,
companions would come to the Holy Prophet,
mm-hmm,
and his grave, and they would get their hajas answered,
uh-huh,
through this process.
That's
so
right.
We have.
Was this only for, we can't say, paying visit and remembering the deceased one, or no? They believe that there must be a relation between our paying visit and the situation, the conditions of the dead body or the deceased one over there.
Yes. So regarding the concept of the Ahl Sunnah, the majority of the scholars of the Ahl Sunnah believe that paying visit to the graves of their deceased one, the near ones, the elders of the family, for example, is recommended on occasion, and it is mustahab for all the men of the community to visit. Regarding the women visiting the graves, there is a difference of opinion, but regarding the men in the community, it is considered mustahab, or an act that is considered that is recommended.
All right.
Right. So, but the Wahhabi thought or the Salafi thought would disagree with with that concept. But the view of the Ahl al-Tashayyu or the followers of the Ahl al-Bayt is that not only men, but also for women, it is mustahab and recommended to visit the graves of all the dead relatives, or even when you visit the graves, you have this this salam from the Holy Prophet that is recommended. Assalamu alayka ya ahl al-qubur.
Yes.
And so this is narrated even in Sunni sources that whenever the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam would pass from a graveyard, he would send this salutation or salam to these people who had died earlier.
Even Imam Ali alayhi salam in a beautiful hadith is addressing the deceased one in Wadi al-Salam. He is talking to them as if they are alive, okay? So, I mean, all these ahadiths show that there must be a philosophy. And there are some special etiquettes, for example, for burying a deceased one, okay? This is not so as burying it, okay, over there and just leaving it, okay? So there are some burial processions done and ceremonies over there. There are these etiquettes must be observed.
IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
Again, the same question, what's the effect of our paying visit to a deceased one? Does he or she feel it? I mean, our paying visit?
Yes, of course. You know, if I want to explain it by an example,
very good.
You can imagine that someone is in a jail.
Uh-huh.
When he is in a jail, he cannot work to earn money, I don't know, to buy some food, to, I don't know, buy some water for himself. He cannot do anything, but you, as his relatives, out of the jail, you can work, earn money, and buy food for him.
Mm-hmm.
When you go to visit this one in prison, you can help him.
Okay.
Even if they don't give him any food, you can give him. Even if they give food to him, you can give him more.
All right.
You know, the one in the grave is like the one in a jail.
Like a prisoner.
Like a prisoner.
That's right.
He cannot act.
Mm-hmm.
The action profile is closed.
Yes.
He cannot continue. But you can help him.
Right.
And about the tradition of Prophet, you know, we say that we go to his grave to help him. Do we have an example from Prophet that this philosophy is correct or not? Yes, we have. Even in Quran, my brother mentioned to some rivayats as tradition, and we have, I want to add, a verse. We have in Surah Tawbah, verse 84, وَلَا تَقُمْ عَلَى قَبْرِهِ إِنَّهُمْ كَفَرُ. You know, what is this verse? What is this story? The story of this verse is that after some battles in the time of Prophet, some of the people who were killed, they were apparently Muslims, but they were munafiq, engaged with hypocrisy.
That's right.
And all the time they looked for hurting Islam and Muslims and prophets. So they were killed in the battlefield, and because Prophet was kind, he tried to do istighfar for them. So he wanted God to forgive them. Prophet stayed on their grave. It means that Prophet visited their grave and did istighfar for them. God please forgive them. And a verse revealed, وَلَا تُسَلَّ عَلَى أَحَدٍ مِّنْهُمْ.
Mm-hmm.
Do not say prayer for them. وَلَا تَقُمْ عَلَى قَبْرِهِ. Don't be kind with them. You know, it doesn't mean that Prophet didn't know what is right or wrong. It was Prophet's kindness more than he was ordered.
That's right.
Yeah,
God, so it was a custom of paying visit to the people.
Yeah, I want
okay?
to say that.
That's right.
So what is the meaning? It means that it was a tradition that Prophet used to go and visit the graves, but this one, this example was banned by God.
Because there were hypocrites.
Yes.
So Prophet Muhammad was prohibited from paying visit to the tomb and the graves of the hypocrites.
But God didn't say, do not stay on everyone's grave. He said, وَلَا تَقُمْ عَلَى قَبْرِهِ. This one who is hypocrite. So from this verse, we can understand that this was a tradition, that even Prophet
right.
did that.
Okay.
And so what is the philosophy? What did Prophet do for them that God banned it? Do istighfar for them.
All right.
So this one doesn't deserve that.
All right.
But what about the other one?
Okay.
Our relatives
That's
do
right.
not consider them as hypocrite people.
All right.
So they are died. And like the traditional Prophet, we want to go to their graves and ask God to forgive them. And even about the tradition of Lady Fatima al-Zahra, the daughter of Prophet, we have that she used to go to the grave of Hamza every week.
Yes.
She used to go and make tasbih from the soil of the grave of Hamza. So this is not bid'ah as some Wahhabi scholars claim that.
Okay, that's it. So, Sheikh Danish, your final remarks regarding paying visits to the tomb, Sheikh.
Yes. So, as Sheikh Fadai mentioned, that there's a verse in the Holy Quran regarding this. Another verse of the Holy Quran also alludes to the same topic. It's Surah Tawbah, verse number 103. And the verse goes like this, that خُذْ مِنْ أَمْوَالِهِمْ صَدَقَةً تُطَاهِرُهُمْ وَتُزَكِّيهِمْ بِهَا وَصَلِّ عَلَيْهِمْ إِنَّ صَلَاتَكَ سَكَنٌ لَهُمْ Wallahu Samiyun Alim. It's basically on the wujub or the obligation of zakah. Zakat or the ordained amount of charity that is given out of the possession of the Muslims. So when zakat was made wajib, the Holy Prophet is commanded to take zakat from the Muslims and then to pray for them. Wasalli alayhim.
All right.
And what is the effect of the prayer of the Holy Prophet for the Muslims? Inna salataka sakanun lahum, that your prayer for them is a source of peace and security for the believers. So whenever the Prophet prays for a person who is alive or dead, it is going to send blessings and peace and security on that person.
That's right.
And therefore, we know that the Prophet ﷺ has a hayat barzakhi. He's not dead in the way that
It's a kind of purgatory life or a kind of a life in the in the world between these world and
when we
other
say
world,
that shuhada or the martyrs are alive, the Prophet being the Prophet of the martyrs is of course alive in the sense that he can listen to the prayers or he can listen to the salawat or the blessings sent upon him.
Okay.
And so he responds to these blessings and to these prayers, and as a result he prays for the believers. And this prayer for the believers is a source of security and peace and blessings for the believers.
That's
and
right.
therefore, we say that visiting the tomb of the Prophet, the prayer of the Holy Prophet wasallam, and the prayer of the Ahlul Bayt wasallam, is a source of peace and security and blessings for the believers.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Sheikh Dana, Sheikh Fadai, for a nice elaboration regarding this concept, paying visits to the tombs and the graves of our deceased ones. It was very kind of you. And thank you much, dear listeners. For more information, visit our website, iranradio.ir. Also, send us your emails and questions at iranradio@irab.ir. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanullah.
What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
First came the media campaign, then the pressure from conservative politicians, threats against members and damage to their property. Now the Austrian state prepares terror charges against one of the most established anti-racist and anti-colonial organizations in the country, Daral Chanup. Among the accused is their current chairperson.
The situation was similar like the house raids against our association Daral Chanup in February. The house raids were supported by heavy force through the special unit Vega, and they came into my apartment and they confiscated laptops, telephones, documents from the association, and also private books, for example a book from the 1980s in German language from Rassan Kanafani.
Following the raids, the activist lost his job and is now facing several charges for his political support of Palestine and anti-colonial struggle in the global south.
The state prosecutor accused us of membership of a criminal organization, membership of terrorist organizations, and also the kind of we are people who force others to violent acts and terrorist acts.
The association had to close their premises due to the growing legal expenses. The activists face imprisonment of up to 10 years if charged. The Austrian government launched its crackdown on pro-Palestine protests and activists after October 7 in 2023. It imposed a ban on the first rally that was held after the state, but activists went ahead and held the rally, which resulted in the arrest of hundreds of them. Now, 2 years later, the court has announced its ruling on the legality of the ban.
The Constitutional Court has now ruled after 2 years that the ban on the demonstration was lawful. We will now appeal this decision to the European Court of Justice.
Legal experts say this harsh repression of the Palestine Solidarity Movement in the past 2 years increasingly undermines democratic rights throughout Europe.
Gerade auch das Strafrecht immer mehr zu
criminal law is increasingly becoming a system of thought crime. This means that people are being reported and convicted because they hold a particular political opinion that is deemed illegitimate by the authorities. And I consider this a very dangerous development.
The European Palestine Solidarity Movement has faced unprecedented repression and discrimination in the past 2 years. Germany and Hungary are among the most repressive states, but Austria is taking even one step further, equating opposition to the Gaza genocide with terrorism. Dieter Reinisch from Vienna.
Pro-justice demonstrators supporting Palestine Action's co-founder Huda Amouri taking the British government to court in the first ever judicial review of a proscribed group.
This is the culmination of a really concerted effort and a campaign over about 5 years to completely crush protest laws in this country, which means completely crush the fundamentals of democracy in this country.
Over 3 days, the High Court is examining whether the British Interior Ministry, known as the Home Office, followed lawful procedure when banning the group in July this year. Last month, the government tried but failed to block the case altogether.
I'm appalled at the fact that genocide, the crime of crimes, is being swept under the rug in favor of the British state's geopolitical and economic interests. And we're familiar with this. I mean, obviously, I'm coming from Germany, where we are the German, but not we. The German government is the second largest weapons deliverer to Israel. And the British state also has, the British Empire has interests that they are looking to protect. They are threatened by Palestine Action and by nonviolent direct action.
The hearing follows nationwide civil disobedience. The outcome of this court battle will have consequences for thousands of campaigners like these arrested for holding up these signs. Before the ban, which was issued under terrorism legislation, Palestine Action had targeted the UK-based sites of Elbit Systems, Israel's largest weapons manufacturer. They also sprayed red paint into the engines of two military planes they accused of refueling aircraft involved in Israel's genocidal war on Gaza.
The prescription has come because of a lot of pressure from outside interests, the military-industrial complex, political lobbyists, military lobbyists, both internally to the UK and externally.
The activists who carried out those actions are held in remand. Six are now on an open-ended hunger strike.
It can't be denied that this is all part of the same fight, and it's all inextricably linked together. If the deprescription appeal is successful, then it will prove to everybody that this is not a terrorist organization. And there's no justification to keep people held in prison without trial on terrorist charges.
In a dramatic last-minute twist, the judge adjudicating the case was replaced with a three-judge panel, including one that voted in favor of the UK sales of the F-35 parts to Israel, fueling accusations of a stitch-up among campaigners. Beyond the legal arguments, the campaigners here say this case exposes something deeper, and that is the length to which the British government is prepared to go to protect the Israeli regime and its interests, even if that means stretching the law to silence those who challenge them. Saeed Pourreza, London.
As Israel's deadly onslaught in Gaza continues, any notion of a ceasefire exists in name only, according to Francesca Albanese. The UN Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territories told a European Parliament hearing on Tuesday via video link that relatively few countries have stood up for Palestinians.
The rest have been bending backward and forward to comply with the diktat of the United States, including European countries and European Union.
Albanese is scathing about the US-driven plan for Gaza's future, especially the reconstruction proposals.
The reconstruction plan not only is wrong as it's planned, because it's planned without the Palestinians and while the bombing and the shooting and the starving are still ongoing, but also because Gaza is a crime scene.
Several lawmakers expressed anger that Palestinians are not being placed at the center of discussions about Gaza's future.
It's so striking, the current EU reaction to the 28-point plan regarding Ukraine, where the EU very clearly said there's no plan without the Ukrainians.
Once again, fresh calls were made for the EU to halt all trade with the Israeli regime. There have been any number of debates and events in the European Parliament relating to the plight of Palestinians, but they effectively come to nothing. This is because any potential sanctions don't even get as far as here, the EU Council, and that is because the European Commission knows they'll be blocked by certain member states. Analysts argue that the EU has now taken a back seat on foreign policy, with the United States firmly in control.
I mean, the whole situation with the European Union in the Middle East now, it's clear there is no vision in Europe, there is no policy, at least no coherent policy.
Some legislators support Albanese's call for dual EU-Israeli nationals to be investigated upon re-entering the bloc, a measure previously applied to suspected foreign fighters returning from Daesh-controlled areas.
Was immediately, this is a potential terrorist because he was fighting in the Middle East, and now it's completely silence. I mean, the right wing, although they always talk about security and how to watch the borders so that no terrorists come inside, now they receive with open hands.
Albanese told the committee that the EU should suspend all ties with Israel, except those required to enforce international court rulings against Tel Aviv. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Braving the autumn chill, people across Indian-administered Kashmir gathered in large numbers on Tuesday to mark the martyrdom anniversary of Hazrat Fatima Zahra, the revered daughter of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. The Tuesday event concluded week-long ceremonies in Kashmir and the neighboring border area of Kargil, which featured religious gatherings, scholarly conferences and mourning processions to honor Hazrat Fatima.
Hazrat Fatima exemplifies the highest standards of behavior as a daughter, wife and mother. Her life stands as a timeless model of virtue for every generation. Although she lived only 18 years, her spiritual closeness to God earned her the title of Leader of the Women of Paradise.
Mourners emphasize that Hazrat Fatima's immense contribution to Islam is often overlooked, particularly in the West due to persistent misconceptions about women's rights and status in Islamic tradition.
Islam uniquely advocates gender equality and firmly protects women's rights. In an era where society increasingly commodifies women, the teachings and example of Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her, are more relevant than ever, offering a complete model of dignity and respect. Her moral integrity, humility and devotion make her unique among all women.
Speakers recalled Prophet Muhammad's profound love for his daughter, affection that directly challenged the norms of pre-Islamic Arabia, where daughters were frequently devalued.
Hazrat Fatima possessed qualities beyond description. She was a divine personality and a fountainhead of guidance and piety. Our holy prophet's love and respect for his daughter was so profound that it would stand up in her honor. Her unwavering defense of justice and rightful leadership reflects her commitment to truth, integrity, and the rights of the oppressed.
The speakers urged people to study Hazrat Fatima's life more deeply and draw inspiration from her patience, piety, and unwavering faith, saying her legacy remains a guiding light for Muslim women and a model of steadfastness and spiritual excellence.
As Kashmir joined the global Muslim community in remembering Hazrat Fatima Zahra, scholars and participants describe her as a timeless role model whose humility, strength and devotion continue to guide Muslims across generations. Sayyidri Safir, Indian Administered Kashmir.
Iran's Supreme National Security Council Ali Larajani arrived in Pakistan on Monday. His visit marks a significant step in the ongoing efforts by both countries to consolidate cooperation amid heightened regional tensions. Shortly after his arrival, Larajani met Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif, President Asif Ali Zardari, Deputy Prime Minister Ishaq Dar, and other high-ranking officials and think tank heads, engaging in wide-ranging discussions on bilateral ties and regional security. The discussions focused on expanding bilateral trade, with both sides reiterating their commitment to removing trade barriers, activating the barter trade mechanism, and expediting the Pakistan-Iran Free Trade Agreement. Larajani also praised Pakistan's support for Iran during the U.S.-Israeli aggression against the country earlier this year.
We discussed all key bilateral matters, especially how to expand our economic cooperation and strengthen trade. Pakistan is a true brotherly nation, and together we explored practical ways to deepen our security ties, enhance people-to-people contact, and coordinate our positions on major international issues.
Pakistani leadership underscored Islamabad's commitment to deepening political, economic, and security cooperation with Tehran.
We discussed all the regional, bilateral, global issues. It was a wonderful meeting. I'm grateful to my brother Excellency for his visit and sparing time to meet with me. And we had very open discussion about all the issues which are currently being faced by the regional and the multilateral forums.
Observers say Larajani's visit signals a strategic recalibration in Iran's regional engagement after the June war with Israel. They say the visit also underscores Pakistan's rising relevance in Tehran's long-term vision, particularly in border security, regional trade, and balanced diplomacy in a volatile neighborhood.
We are proud of Iran's resistance. They have set a new example because they have shattered the myth of Israeli invincibility through the determination, through the will, and the fighting power of the Iranian nation. And we feel that Iran showed that imperialism, hegemony, Zionism, they say might is right, right is might. And they failed miserably in that.
Larajani is the second high-ranking Iranian official to visit Pakistan this month, after Parliament Speaker Mohammad Bakar Kalibaf.
The latest high-level meetings between the top officials of Iran and Pakistan show that the two neighbors are not only focused on boosting trade and economic partnerships, but also on developing coordinated mechanisms for regional peace and security. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Thanks to Trump, European Commission insiders say an atmosphere of fear and uncertainty continues to hang over EU-US trade relations. Meeting on Monday, EU trade ministers agreed the bloc must broaden its commercial horizons and seek additional stable partners.
What we are working on continuously, that we have to diversify our trade. The Commissioner gave us a state on ongoing negotiations with India and a number of other countries and regions in Asia, Middle East and Africa.
It emerged at Monday's meeting, attended by senior White House officials, that the EU has already paid €173 billion for US energy imports this year, much of it for costly liquefied natural gas shipped across the Atlantic. Those charges filter through industry and ultimately onto consumers. It's a stark contrast to the much cheaper Russian gas that once powered the EU. The head of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, struck a deal with Trump at his golf course in Scotland last July. He had been threatening 50% US tariffs on all EU imports, but in the end they settled on a baseline 15% levy. Now Washington officials are annoyed at the EU over its slow implementation of that deal. Punishing 50% US tariffs on EU steel and aluminium remain firmly in place. The current trade arrangements have drawn sharp criticism from inside the European Parliament.
Trump is the worst bully in the schoolyard. He picks on everyone. You should never give in to blackmail. The more money we promise to pour into the US, the more they will demand from us.
EU citizens are equally scathing of the current US administration.
I think it's just right now a pause maybe before, I know, like maybe then Trump decides to impose tariffs again or to increase them on us. And plus right now with the Ukraine plan, again, like the recently disclosed Ukraine plan, is going to be other tensions as well.
If Vance is taking the place of Trump because he's talking about that now, I think it's even more dangerous. And in a way, even if they go back and they will be less rude in a few years, I think the tune is set, if we can say this in English. I think it's very dangerous. Yeah, I think so.
Government leaders are being accused of surrendering far too much ground to Trump on trade, leaving millions of already struggling EU businesses and households to shoulder the cost. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Italian prosecutors will have to decide whether to put the suspects, who today are between 65 and 80 years old, on trial. They are suspected of voluntary murder aggravated by cruelty and abject motives, a crime which has no statute of limitations and carries a maximum life sentence.
Some political analysts believe that the whole Sarajevo sniper tourism affair can also be read through the lens of geopolitics. They suspect that there are governments who are trying to link Serbian President Aleksandar Vučić to the so-called sniper safaris that took place in Bosnia in the 1990s.
The risk that this affair is turned into a political tool clearly exists. Some may be eager to find political implications in these murders, but they would be wrong. Those were just criminal acts.
I think it could well be politicized because the information that we have at the moment is very murky indeed, and no concrete details are being given as to what is actually being investigated. Neither the numbers, nor the people involved, nor the countries involved.
During the Rome press conference, Gavazzeni also pointed out that Italy's military intelligence agency was aware of the abominable trips when they took place, but nothing was done to stop them. Max Civili, Rome.
Thank you.
This is Back to Reality. Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Roundtable from Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of your very favorite Back to Reality. Well, this is Asma once more. I have the honor to be your host in this program. And I have two very dear guests, Brother Liaqat and Sister Zainab. And I'm sure that your company is going to be so enjoyable and we're going to have a lot of insights to be sharing with each other. So, just like always, we have this ritual of the guests presenting themselves for the audience who have just joined us. Please give us a very brief introduction about yourself, and let's start with Sister Zainab, ladies first.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm Turfadlan Zainab Askari. I actually came from India, but I have been living in Iran for some 10 years now. I studied science, then linguistics, and then Hausa. So I'm a multidisciplinary student.
Which makes you perfect for this program. And then you, Brother Liaqat.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm Muhammad Liaqat Abbas from India. I've done my bachelor's in Islamic history, and currently I'm about to finish my master's in psychology.
Very good. Thank you very much, both of you, for coming here.
Thank you.
Maybe that sounds very odd and weird to ask ourselves that, what is the reason of traveling? But in most cases, traveling happens because we want to change the environment, because we want to perhaps meet new people, new places, and get away from the life and all the hustles and bustles and all the business that we have in our own zone. But now we decide to travel in order to refresh ourselves, in order to get a different perspective of life. Now, this is the very surface meaning of traveling, I guess. When we travel, there are many other things that come into our minds.
When I hear about travel, I hear that it's all talking to all of us, like us as human beings. Why? Because we are all travelers at the moment.
Yeah.
Right now, over here, we are all sitting over here, but we are still travelers.
Travelers.
So according to the hadith of Imam Ali alayhi salam, we are all travelers, and it's just a part of day in which we are just kind of taking rest. And that very small rest that we have just sat on the earth is the time span of our lives. And then the caravan head is going to tell us, okay, this is not the place to sit. Get on the vehicle, get on the camelback, get on the animal, so that we have to travel. So it's basically...
So don't forget that you are a traveler.
You are a traveler. We are all travelers.
And in literature, we usually say you're actually a lonely traveler. So don't even get attached to the people or the things that you meet in the journey.
Definitely, definitely. So... we are traveling in this world, even if we think that we are going to stay for a long period of time, but that's a myth and that's an illusion. And I've asked a lot of people, and the final conclusion is they say that we have just lived for a part of day, and this is what we will hear on the Day of Judgment as well. So after this, after the life on this earth, we have the different stages in the Day of Judgment. I can carry stones, I can carry diamonds with myself, and if I'm really wise enough, definitely I'm going to carry diamonds, and I'm going to leave all the stones. So yeah, the diamonds are nothing
but
our good
deeds. How to travel with not heavy luggages, with very slight.
If we speak about light luggage, I would say the good deeds are those which are gonna give us wings. When it is stated in the Holy Quran, so any person will not lift the burden. So when it comes to bad deeds and stuff, it's about the burdens. So when I'm traveling, I have to carry the burden on myself. But if I'm having the good deeds, it's as if like I'm having wings with myself, which is going to make us fly. So yeah, this is the other meanings too, like migration.
Yeah, I would like to add to the provision that you talked about, like the provision that we should take in travel. I would like to add to the provision of travel that you were speaking to, like good deeds are our provision, and also like so in Surah Baqarah we have فَإِنَّ خَيْرَ زَادِتْ تَقْوَى, which means like the provision of your travel should be taqwa. Because we are
the best luggage.
Yeah.
The best thing you can carry with yourself is your taqwa, piety.
Is piety, yeah. But that means to like, the basic meaning of it is to perform what is commanded and avoid what is forbidden.
By the way, so just as the brother was telling us about the spiritual aspect of traveling, I just remembered something, that when we start a travel, do we look for an objective of this travel or no? We just move. And it's the idea of moving. Is it to escape myself or to confront myself?
I think it is to, it's rather, the, when it's talking about the spirituality, I think it's the journey inward. And I think Salat helps us a lot in this. It always reminds us of this. Like Imam Ali alayhi salam, when talking about why to, what is the reason behind two sajda, like two times we prostrate in front of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, says like first time we say it's like we are made from this, then we stand up again, it's like we will be raised again, and then we will again be, you know, turned into clay. So like all the salat itself is talking about the journey, the wuzu, the philosophy of that. It's
so
also
it's a metaphorical embodiment of the whole journey.
Yes, Imam Ali talks very beautiful about this. Like it's a bit long, but it's talking about the same journey, like where we came from, where we have to go, how we were made, and how we have to be. So and in this journey, the same salat teaches us to be down to earth. To be very down.
So there must be objectives and goals that you set for your journey.
Indeed. Indeed. Without an objective, what is the fun? Like you're wasting your time or wasting the journey, or you're not learning from that journey.
Yeah, but actually, now we go for a break and then we come back to talk about this point, that what we actually are doing, many of us, in this travel and journey that we have on earth, we forget about the fact that, okay, this is a journey in which I have to have some objectives set for myself.
Mm-hmm.
We just come and move, and this is just the matter of moving and the matter of having fun, and that's all. Which I think if we look at it like this, then life is going to seem so empty. Okay, let's go for the break, and then we come back to see what's more with traveling.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.